Where's Lee Breers? Here he is with a drop goal. Lee Breers.
Lynham's through one. Lynham's through two. Wow. Lynham gets the try.
Daryl Clark runs to the left to win it. Daryl Clark reaches and scores.
Hi, I'm Carl Fitzpatrick and welcome to Rewired, the first in a series of podcasts taking a look back at some of the memorable moments in the Warrington Wolves timeline. To help me review these games are some of the stars of the club, both past and present. In our first episode, we go back to the 2012 Super League playoff and the Wires win over St Helens, which booked the club's first grand final trip to Old Trafford. But to join me and reminisce about this game, we've got two former outstanding players that participated in that game. We've got the former Man of Steel and goal-kicking extraordinaire, Mr. Brett Hodgson. Brett?
Pretty, how are you guys? How are you?
Very good, very good. And also joining us is the self-proclaimed Man of Steel and club stalwart, is Paul Wood. Paul, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm good, Fitzy. Cheers, thanks for having me.
Good stuff. So, Brett, we'll start with you. How are you enjoying your experience at West Tigers?
Yeah, love it. I love coaching. Even before I came over to England, I got my coaches' badges and made sure that that was already ticked off before I came over there. And absolutely love my time over in England. I had so much fun over there at both Huddersfield and obviously Warrington. Great memories with some really good friends that I still keep in contact with to this day. So loving the coaching. It's a different type of enjoyment where you don't get out there and throw your body into the tackles and get tackled and things like that, you know, which is good because I don't miss that at all. At the same time, it's always good to see.
You ever do that, Odger?
I didn't like tackling, mate. That's why I used to push you boys all around the place to make sure you did it. But yeah, it's you know, when you see the progression of some of the juniors coming through and the enjoyment that you get in that is just outstanding.
Yeah. So what is your role at West Lodge?
Yeah, I'm assistant coach. It's sort of I get a hand in a little bit of everything, which is really good. I've got with working with certain positional players, do some back five stuff, help with some fullback in terms of defensive positioning, and then dip a little bit into some set play stuff, and also help with some of the junior development. So, excuse me, wide range. I did for the first 2 years coming back. I was head coach of the reserve grade as well, but moved out of that this year into the first grade. So I really enjoy my time.
Excellent. And Paul, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with yourself before the lockdown?
Yeah. At the moment I've been working in sales. So obviously I was concentrating on that in the construction industry. Also in my spare time, I'm doing a bit of coaching myself at a local amateur club in Wigan, which, you know, I'm a bit like Odgy. I do enjoy the coaching aspect of it, or, you know, trying to teach the players new skills. It's very rewarding knowing that, you know, I couldn't play anymore. You know, my body's probably a bit too wrecked for that. So next best thing is helping the young lads, and it's really enjoyable. Obviously, it's a completely different level to Odgy, amateur. I just love having the banter with the lads, and you know what? They're a great set of bunch down at Ashton Burrs, and you know, we have a good laugh, and they buy into what we're doing. So, yeah, other than that, mate, just working and a bit of coaching on the side.
Good. Excellent. Before we dive into this game, just cast our minds back to 2011. League leaders, runaway leaders, won the league by some distance, best in attack, best in defence, but fell short in the playoff against Leeds. Move forward 12 months, albeit not as convincing in the league. We did finish second, but we won the Challenge Cup and got to the grand final. Was there any learnings from 2011 that we took into 2012?
Yeah, always. And I think the best way to learn at times is by failing. And the way we got to the grand final the year before, and if you take the right lessons out of situations like that and take them into the next season, then you can always benefit from those hard experiences. But, you know, games, especially in those big games, it's about momentum. And momentum is so easily to shift from one side to the other. And you know, I remember in the grand final that we got to in that 2012 year, and we had the momentum, and then it was one play where we decided to, you know, put a kick cross field rather than just punch it to the corner, and then they just got the roll on, and we couldn't manage to save them from that. So they're difficult things to hold in terms of you always want to get that end result and everyone's striving for that. But it's important to learn from those things that you do in the past and try to make sure that you don't fall into the same habits.
Paul, going into this game, so we're going away to Saints, always a tough ask. They've beaten us already at home in the playoffs pretty convincingly, 28-6. Do you remember what was the mood in the camp? Was we going there confident? What was the feel?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there was a lot of confidence in us. I mean, if I go back pretty much just over 10 years, I played in the Warrington team that beat St Helens in 2001. I think 50-odd points to 20, and then we did a 10-year stint then where we didn't beat Saints once. We've won them close a lot of times, but we didn't get one single win. And I remember Tony Smith saying, you know, once we beat Saints, We'll have that confidence and that belief. And we beat them in 2011. So I think that was a major catalyst for us to, you know, I wouldn't say we'd never had belief going into the Saints games in that 10-year period, but I think there was a lot of pressure to win that game. And I think the win in 2011 where we beat them at the Aliwell Jones, it took a lot of pressure off. I know what you're saying, we got beat in 2012 by them at the Aliwell Jones. But yeah, there was a lot of belief in the team going into that game, and I think that, you know, you've touched on the 2011 season where we had the best defence and the best attacking record in the league, and we didn't win the grand final. But I think, like Odgy said, you know, we learned from our mistakes, and I think we put ourselves under a bit of pressure in 2011 because we were so good, we were blowing teams off the park. But I think in 2012, it was just a little bit of more of a relaxed atmosphere. And, you know, there was a bit more belief. So, you know, you look at 2012 season, we were so close to winning everything. I think we finished second in the league and we lost out by 1 point. We won the Challenge Cup and, we was 20 minutes away from winning the grand final. So, such a dominant team in 2011 and 12. I feel like we underachieved, really. If there was ever a year we was going to win the grand final, I think, you know, 2012 was a great opportunity for us.
Brett, do you recall the preparation for this game? Now, if I remember rightly, I think in this playoff series, I think we stayed in hotels before every single game. If I recall correctly, I think we stayed in Liverpool ahead of this game. Is that something that you would have fitted in your preparation, or would you prefer to stay at home?
Either way, I was pretty fortunate that when I ended up coming over to England, I took that personal release off the pressure. You know, I sort of enjoyed my footy a lot more than I did in Australia, because it was so tense and so much pressure involved with what's here in the NRL. And coming over there, it wouldn't have worried me whether we went to a hotel or I stayed at home or I drove myself or we caught a bus. You know, for some players, that definitely helps, because it takes you out of that. You know, you're with your mates and then you're focusing on footy and you've got someone else looking after you rather than having to do it all yourself. You know, I did think it helped us, that preparation for the entire final series that we were in 2012. I know that we went into that game very confident. You know, Saints always used to say that if other teams could hold us for 20 minutes and they felt that they could get over the top of us. And we knew that going in. So, you know, we use that as a bit of a motivator going into that game, that they're not going to do it to us this time, and we're going to make sure we really give it to them throughout the whole game. And I remember it didn't go our way early, but we just kept plugging away and stuck to it, and a couple of really good plays. You know, there was an offload from Woody that led directly to a try, and big Trent Waterhouse got a double in the game. And it's, you know, the enjoyment that we got out of just being relaxed and being confident that we could go there and do a good performance and come away with a victory was excellent.
Brett, you set up the first try for Chris Riley. That's that classic Britt Hodgson, cut out the centre, hit the winger, he scored in the corner.
What have they got in the bag?
Here is Breers. This is Myler. Looks for the runners, it's Hodgson. Hodgson wide to Riley. Riley is in. Warrington respond. And a wonderful try on this left-hand side by Chris Riley.
Brett, the Warrington supporters have seen you do that on so many occasions, and you've executed that pass throughout your career. Brett, what are you looking for, both from your perspective, from attacking perspective, but also from the defence? What are the key indicators for you to execute that pass accordingly?
Yeah, so the halfback's role in terms of those plays is, you know, it's forever so important to help a fullback execute a 3-on-2 on the edge. So, you know, the way Richie Myler and Breezy both dug into the line, and Trent Waterhouse or Grixty or Benny Harrison, whoever they were that were running those good decoy lines, it allowed me to just make sure that, you know, my indicator was once I saw that three-man bot on the lead, I would just go towards the centre and make him make a decision. If he slid out, then I'd go myself. And if he turned in, then I'd just have to look at the winger and see if I can hit whichever player that I need to hit. So I actually remember on that one, Bridgie actually overran the play. So if you have a look at it, it actually goes behind him. So, you know, I came to the line, I was going to pass it to him, recognised that the winger had actually tucked in to try and control him. And then it allowed, you know, Chris Riley to go over in the corner. So I just love getting the ball in those positions and trying to execute as best as possible.
And is that something that come naturally to you, Brett, or did you practice that over and over and over again?
Oh, a lot of practice. But I was fortunate in that coming through the juniors, I played halfback. So throughout my whole career, I wanted to be a halfback, but was never big enough or good-looking enough to do it. So I made sure that I went into other position, that I got protected a little bit more. And I had the license, even when I was playing in Australia with, you know, Tim Sheens and West Tigers at the time, I had the license to create opportunities as well as being out the back on those lines as a fullback. So my role wasn't traditional in terms of what a fullback's role was back then. So able to roam and try and create opportunities by looking up and seeing what numbers were rather than just be at the back of those plays all the time.
Okay, so 34 minutes in. Sorry, Brett. John Wilkie put for the towering bomb.
The bomb, I remember.
Yeah. McCarthy scores, but puts pressure all over you. Paul Welling scoops it up and scores a try for Saints.
Wilkin, high.
Oh, it
and
is
the
high.
The chase is on. He's lost it. Play on. And it's a try for Wellens.
He'll go upstairs. He wants to see if there's any interference. But the kick was outstanding. They're stunned. The Wolves know it. They are stunned.
Brett, what happened? Now, you was ultra dependable under the high ball. And when I went back and watched the game, I was quite surprised because during your time at Warrington, I can't recall you dropping a high ball, apart from when Hepcale put the high shot on you.
So another good memory.
Did you recall the situation? Was you out of position? What happened?
No, you know, sometimes as a fullback, you've just got to say the kick was too good. And that was, I remember when he put it up, it was a really good spiral and had a little bit of a floating to it. So I did my best and unfortunately didn't come up with a result for that one. So that happens in any game. You always make mistakes. The one thing that I tried to pride myself on was if I made a mistake, I would never make another mistake the same again in that game. Or hopefully in the season. So I did pride myself on catching bombs every single time and used to love it when they put it up, apart from that Hep Cahill one. You know, like, it's just, it was a good kick and I had pressure and I just didn't come up with a result at the time. So, yeah, it's part of footy.
Good. Paul, right on half time, three Saints defenders crawling all over you. You force the offload. And the end result is Simon Grick scores in the beside the post.
To Myler infield, it goes to Wood, and Wood will take them on. And halted by Roby. Can he get the arms clear to make the offload? Yes, he can. Monaghan finds Breers. Breers gets it away. Grick will score for Warrington. An outstanding try.
Was that type of play encouraged by Tony Smith?
Was there only three of them? I thought there were five of them, but I think three. it was actually, yeah, Tony loved an offload, and to be honest with you, when Tony came, you know, I tried to develop that into my game because I knew Tony liked to, you know, to play rugby, and he used to always say, you know, play smart. So, you know, whenever there was an opportunity to offload, I'd try to get it in. But my job was made so much easier playing with the likes of Odger. Odger loved supporting, you know, I think probably 60-70% of my offloads went to Odger, you know, and you know, I had players around me like Trent Waterhouse who encouraged it, and I just think we had that style, that style within the team anyway. But I know that, you know, Tony liked to promote the offload, and when I watch games now, you know, you don't tend to see a lot of offloads. There's a lot of safe rugby, very conservative. But yeah, it was, you know, it was a good change of direction for the team during that match. You know, Grixie scored a great try. You know, Grixie, a great player, you know, running great lines. And, you know, it brought us back into the game. We got a bit of momentum back from that.
Yeah. So we scored right at half-time. And, Odd, you kind of touched on this earlier. But still, we go with him behind. Would you say that it's fair to say that previously Warrington had a bit of a reputation of being great front runners, but when we go behind, we would struggle?
Against certain teams in particular, yeah, I think that's how we were perceived from other teams. No, internally, we believed that we could win every single game that we went in, whether we went behind by a certain amount or were leading by a certain amount. But, you know, I think the perception from a couple of teams, and in St Helens, we heard in particular, were one of those teams that said, you know, they'll put their fists up for 20 minutes and then we will get momentum over them and run away with it. So it was a motivating factor in us.
And that's nothing to do with the interchange around about the 20-minute mark when the front rows may have been rotated.
That's when Woody went off. That's when he used up all his offloads and made his 15 tackles and missed six, and then we got rid of him.
You mentioned a couple. What other teams do you think, Brett, had that perception or that they will put that label on us during this period?
I think As I said, I think it was, you know, when you're playing against the good teams in the competition, and that's not disrespectful to the others that weren't up the top, but, you know, unfortunately, we never got that title in the end. And there was always that arm wrestle and momentum went against us at certain times. So, you know, more so St Helens in particular, they were the ones that, you know, they kept giving it to us. And with that 10-season run of no wins for us as a club, you know, the perception was probably reality for them. So, you know, they had reason to say that, and we had reason to try and make sure that we changed it.
So we come out at second half, we come out the traps, 48 minutes into the game. A great combination, Lee Breers, Joel Monaghan, kick to the corner, which we've seen so often.
From the line with Monaghan and Breers, and he stabs the kick up, looking for Michael Meyer, Joel Monaghan. Oh, he's dropped it. Has he dropped it backwards? Has.
This will be interesting.
Has his brother, has the Joel Monaghan, has he scored it here?
Brett, I want to ask you, what was Lee Breers like, to first of all, to play against and to play with?
Yeah, he's an outstanding player. His ability to control a game, to direct a team around the park, to kick when needed, he was just a really good footballer. He could create opportunities that other halfbacks couldn't see, which made him a danger to play against or play with. And, you know, he used to always put those kicks up for Joel, as you said, or was it, you know, it might have been Matt King or whoever was in those positions to benefit from the opportunity. And again, for me as a fullback, you need your halfback to actually ask questions of the defensive line. So going all the way into the line and getting tackled as he's passing the ball. If a halfback doesn't do that, then it doesn't allow the opportunity as a fullback to create the second wave of opportunities. So I'm sure Woody would agree that the way that Breers used to talk and direct us around the park, it allowed everyone else to do their jobs well.
Paul, you played with a number of quality wingers during your career at Warrington, but how highly would you rate Joel Monaghan? I was looking last night, his strike rate was incredible. 145 games, 145 tries. How good was Joel?
Yeah, obviously his record speaks for himself, but not only could he do tries, you know, he was like a... it could be like an extra forward at the back, you know, and it's vital that, you know, my job was to, you know, to do the defending in the middle, to work hard. And when you've got, you know, the opposition kicking the ball down the field and Joel Monaghan returning it back, you don't have to run back as far. You know, it makes your job as a forward a lot easier. He had loads of different qualities, but he was just a natural finisher of the ball. You know, his try-scoring record, yeah, it's outstanding. But, you know, the qualities that he had in defence, you know, the contributions that he made off the field as well, you know, along with Odje, you know, very fortunate in that Warrington team that a lot of coaching was done by the players, you know, and Joel's an ex-State of Origin player who's played for Australia. So he had a lot of input into, he could be daft, you know, he liked to be a bit of a clown and a character off the field. But you knew when he spoke, he did have some very valuable input into how the team played. And, you know, the overall package of Joel Monaghan, he didn't really have a weak area. You know, he could take the high balls, scored a number of tries off it. He could return the ball back. You know, he was constantly talking. He'd follow up on the offloads. He was just a fantastic player. He's one of the best wingers I've played with. Funnily enough, I did, one of the lads at the Ashton Burst in a WhatsApp group this week asked me to put my best 13 down on paper, and Odje and Joel both made it. and pretty much that team that I picked was pretty much the 2012 team of the Warrington Wolves. And, you know, a lot of the players that I played with there, I use a lot of the information that they passed on from video sessions, from training sessions, and what they did in a game into, you know, the coaching ethos that I've got with the lads down at Ashton Burr. So I'm very, very fortunate to play with some great players, but Joel's certainly up there with one of them.
I need to ask you, did you select yourself in that 13?
No, I didn't, to be
Captain.
Honest.
Captain. Captain,
I did, but I was at 6. He didn't make it.
After this call, would you please send me that 13 through? I'll review it for you. Okay.
Yeah.
So Brett, you touched on this earlier. So we go ahead 18-14, and do you feel now in this game the momentum starts to shift towards ourselves and away from St. Helens? And if so, what does that look like? We often hear commentators and players saying, you said it yourself earlier, Brett, that the momentum, you mentioned it's important, momentum shifted. What actually does that look like? From a playing perspective,
it's a little things that you don't necessarily see on TV cameras. Like there's certain things about body language, about the way people talk out on the field, the way you can see one of their players maybe struggling to get around the park a little bit, and by momentum shifting, that doesn't mean that you're scoring points constantly. It just means that you're playing sort of in the two thirds of the footy field from their try line to our 20, for example, rather than their 20 to our try line. So it's a hard one to explain, but you can just feel when teams have a little bit more energy, or when some teams potentially drop energy. So that period, and you look at the two tries that we scored later. Trent Waterhouse both scored both of them. They came off no big plays. They were off, you know, Richie just skipped across and threw it to Atkins, who stepped on the inside of, I think it might have been Lomax at the time, who was defending at centre.
Because here comes Atkins, and he's got support, and it's Waterhouse who will score for Warrington. From the penalty at one end, Warrington capitalise. Their fans begin to think now the long wait for Old Trafford could be coming to an end.
And then, you know, Trent was there, and another one where he had, you know, no right to even get away from 2-3 tackles, and he just bounced off. So
it's Myler gets it away to the try scorer Waterhouse. Waterhouse has escaped them. Waterhouse plunges in for a second, and Warrington are on the way.
Little examples like that, that when your momentum is going your way, you're able to come up with results that don't necessarily look like big plays.
Yeah. You mentioned Trent Waterhouse there, Brett, and you're right, his second try was absolutely sensational. And post-game, Mike Rush, the caretaker coach, with Kieran Cunningham, actually said it's the best game that he's seen Trent Waterhouse play. Paul, I'm going to ask you this question. Trent comes to Warrington with a very impressive reputation and the number of representative honours. Played for State of Origin. for New South Wales in State of Origin. In fact, he was the first player to be sent off for the Blues. Played for Australia. How would you sum up his time at Warrington?
For me, I say again, he made my 13, Trent. He had big boots to fill. He was a different player from Louis Anderson. We had Louis Anderson at Warrington at the time, who left to go to the Catalan Dragons. Trent came in, bit of a different style of player. You know, Louis was this tough, no-nonsense forward. Oshie came in a little bit more relaxed, brought an offloading game and a bit more of a passing game to the team. I felt like he was very underrated at times, you know, from some of the fans. He brought so much to the game. He was such a big unit. And although sometimes he didn't look like he was difficult to stop, when you're trying to stop 17 and a half stone, a 6'4" running at you, he takes a lot out of the defence. But, you know, he was another classic example of the style of play at the time at Warrington, where the offload was promoted. You know, 9 times out of 10, if Richard Myler was on his side, or Ryan Atkins or Roger, Ousey could get the ball away. So it was very valuable. And I remember in that Saints game, just a couple of nice plays from Trent. You know, it was one of the, probably, you know, the tries that he scored, yeah, they was outstanding. And the people said that, you know, the best games that he's ever played. But being in the trenches with him and you know, sat in a video review session on a Monday morning, knowing that he'd done 40 to 45 tackles some weeks, do you know what I mean? And he'd done 20 carries on the back of it. And they're the things that go unnoticed sometimes by the fans. But they're so vital, because you've touched on momentum in a game. That's what wins your momentum sometimes. You know, how solid he was in terms of, you know, he could make 45 tackles and miss none during a game, keeping us momentum and getting us the momentum back. We talk about momentum, but it can be changed as quick as just a missed tackle, like Ryan Atkins busting through against Saints and passing it back inside to Ousey. Completely changes the dynamics of the game. And I think when you're playing, you don't tend to see it, but I think when you start coaching and you're watching the game, you have a bit more of an indication of what momentum is, because I speak about it to the lads now, and we was losing in a first league game of the season just before the lockdown, and we was losing 18-4, and I kept talking about momentum. And anyway, we come back and we drew 18-all with this team. But I use that phrase quite a lot, and I never really understood it as much when I was playing. But it's vital that, you know, you stay switched on constantly. The tackles, you know, you're not missing tackles. Balls are not going down. You know, the passes are hitting the spots where they need to hit. So, yeah, I think for me, Ousey was, I think he was a little bit undervalued at times. We brought so much to the team for me.
Brett, despite him being on the losing side, James Robey, again, has another outstanding game. And in fact, in 2012, is the runner-up to Sam Tompkins for the Man of Steel. Firstly, how good was James Robey? And secondly, did we have any specific game plan to negate his play and his style for that game?
Yeah, look, he was a brilliant player. There's no doubt about it, and he followed a pretty decent player in Cunningham before him as well. So it was quite a good stable of hookers over in St Helens at the time. And you always have certain plans in a game, and you know, I can't remember it exactly, but I would assume that we tried to get at him to make him make tackles and make him fatigued and things like that. But they're the type of player that just keep going. Mick Monaghan was an example of that as well. Teams used to get at him all the time, and he would still execute the plays under fatigue, just like Robey would. So I think it's always damaged limitations with players like that. Like you try and put a little plan in place to fatigue them, but they're always still going to create opportunities for their team. So it's about being on a high alert and making sure that you're talking him up. And, you know, the better that we controlled the ruck and slowed down the play the ball speed, that minimised his opportunities as well. So I actually thought that we did pretty well at that game after about that 20, 25-minute mark. Once we controlled the momentum of the ruck, I thought that we minimised his opportunities.
Paul, you would have come up against, obviously, James on numerous occasions. Do you recall anything specifically from that game? As Brett mentioned, you mean slowing the ruck down, controlling the or slowing their momentum down. Did you have any specific techniques, tactics that you applied in that game?
Yeah, you know, he's just been touched on there. You know, very valuable James Robey is and still is to the Saints team. James Robey is the player I hated to play against the most because wasn't necessary. You know, he's obviously not the biggest player, but he's one of the strongest players I've ever played against. And once, you know, Saints got into the 10-meter zone and Robey was scooting so hard to stop on your own line. But, you know, Odgy spoke about there, you know, we'd target James Robey to try and make him do 30-40 tackles to tire him out, but it never worked. You know, the guy's a machine. He can make 40 tackles during a game and next minute he's picking up and he's scooting through your line of defence. But he's such a kingpin to the Saints side. To as far as I'd go, I'd say I personally think he's the best snooker we've had in Super League. Is James Robey. I just think he's been phenomenal. You know, he's got, you know, all the stats. He's played over 500 games now. You know, he's won every trophy that he can win. And I just think he's a fantastic player. But if you can keep him, the forwards quiet and James Robey, you nullify a lot of the attacking threats in the St. Helens team. And then a lot of the other players around him get frustrated. So a bit like Adrian Morley was to Warrington, people looked up to him and they wanted him to lead from the front. And I think Saints still do that and even did that back then to say, you know, James, get us on the front foot, get us a bit of momentum, and then everyone around him would play, you know, their best games, basically. So, he's a massive player.
I mentioned there that James Robey was the runner-up for the Man of Steel to Sam Tomkins, and the player that actually finished third that year in the Man of Steel was our very own Super Benny Westwood. Now, I appreciate Benny didn't get the headlines for this fixture, but what sort of player was Benny to play with, Brett?
As a player, absolutely outstanding. As a trainer, Woody, he would avoid absolutely everything. Like he would walk on the field 10 minutes late. He would do everything half pace, but when it got to the game and he crossed that white line, it would turn into an absolute machine. It's the things that he did on the field. He was intimidating to different players. He created opportunities because he knew how to play, you know, rugby. He ran hard. He had an offload. He had a quick play the ball. Defensively, he would inspire us as a team defensively because he would put on some big shots or would clean up certain situations that maybe another player would mess up. He was an exceptional player to play with. So, you know, a lot of the accolades that Benny got, he absolutely deserves. How he did it with his training ethic, I will have absolutely no idea, but it was brilliant. You could just switch it.
He was the type of guy. Benny Westwood, for me, is the guy who defies sports science. Do you know what I mean? If you're a strength and conditioning coach or a coach, he must be the most frustrating person to work with because he does the opposite of what the science tells us and what the research tells us. You know, he eats black pudding for his breakfast and then he has 20 fags, you know, and he's like the old school rugby league player. But, you know, Benny's determination is it's just second to none. He's probably the most determined player I've ever played with. And his favourite catchphrase at training was, "I'm saving me energy for the games." And, you know, generally he would be at the back with me during training, but, we're saving our energy for the games. He'd play a lot longer than me. But, you know, he's just unbelievable and, you know, tough. You know, I think determination and toughness. If he weren't a rugby player, you could probably stick him in the Marines and he'd do that.
Yeah. I remember a story, I think it may have been from the 2012 season actually, and you both kind of alluded to it there, that genetically he was pretty incredible. He didn't have to do a lot of training but yet delivered on a game day. And it was at the time when I was doing the cryotherapy, going on the cryotherapy chamber, and for those out there that are not sure what it is, it's basically an expensive and posh ice bath. You go in, it's like a human fridge in the temperature.
A disgusting one like that.
Because it's so
terrible.
Sub 160. And they're doing a study where they take the blood from the players and look for distress markers in the blood called cortisol. So they do a test pre-game and then they do a test post-game. And all the players are taking the tests. And obviously, it's coming back, the cortisol, the massive spike in cortisol post-game. However, they get to Super Benny Westwood. They check his cortisol levels and it's basically just flatline. No change from the game. Despite being involved in what I could describe as probably 30 or 40 mini car crashes, there's been no stress put on his body. So you both just touched on that. Unbelievable player, unbelievable guy, and certainly a fan's favourite.
I think he's like he's half Neanderthal, isn't he? He's half human, half Neanderthal. He's probably like a caveman. They should probably do like a study on him and actually see where he's come from.
Yeah, brilliant. So Chris Riley grabs his second try.
Here is Myler. They go wide. It's Atkins and further wide to Riley. That's it. Warrington are heading to Old Trafford. Chris Riley's second try. It's given without reference upstairs. And Warrington, it's been a long wait. It's been 15 years in the making, or 15 seasons in the making. And look at them on the terraces. They know they are on the way to a grand final for the very first time.
Eventually we win 18-36. I mean, unbelievable scenes at full time. We're going to our maiden grand final. Guys, what was it like? What was it like as a team to be the first Warrington team to get to Old Trafford?
For me, it was brilliant. You know, looking back once you retire, you tend to appreciate the experiences you have, win, loss, whatever it is. So, obviously for Woody being over there and born and raised in England and myself coming from Australia, and I was fortunate to play at, Wembley a couple of times. I was fortunate to play at Old Trafford and the experience in the crowd and the energy that's generated from playing at Old Trafford is just, it was absolutely outstanding. And as I said, unfortunately, we were in a position that we could have won that game, but we let it slip and that's, that's on us. But the experience and the emotion that you get with playing in a grand final is why you play the game. That's why you train for, 3 months before Christmas or before and just after Christmas to prepare yourself to play every single week to win a title. And to be a part of that was outstanding.
Paul, you spent all your Super League career at Warrington. What was it like?
Yeah, for myself, I was just so relieved to take the team to the grand final and, be involved in like you said, that first Super League team to get the Warrington team. And to do it at St Helens were... I've been through the good times and the dark times at Warrington because, I signed in 1999. I went through the time where, financially they really struggled. Then we were, 2002, we was fighting relegation. And then, Paul Cullen came in and changed the dynamics again of the club and, took us to contenders in the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, Tony Smith comes in, a couple of other players, and now we're challenging, we're winning league leaders, challenge cups, and, getting to the grand final. And I just felt like, it were difficult at times, at Warrington, it was difficult at times, but I was just so pleased. I love the club. I'm so happy that I played all my career there. I'm so pleased as well that I never took the option to move on. And I stuck it out and then, achieved what I did with that Warrington team. And that night, it were very special. I'd overcome a lot of injuries as well during that time. And, missed out on the first Challenge Cup in 2009 with a broken leg, which I was heartbroken about. I thought, that am I going to get the chance to play in another final? And just kept plugging away and were fortunate enough then to play in two other Challenge Cup finals and then, get to the grand final twice. But that night, the first grand final, it was like, wow, how good is this? And we all genuinely thought we was going to win that grand final. Unfortunate, we never and still have sleepless nights about both grand finals, really. But that night was special. And that group of players, when you look back, like Odgy said, you finish your career, and you can look back and, they're the things that that you remember, the Grand Finals, the Challenge Cup Finals, you know, winning the league leaders, those group of players, and think, how blessed am I to be able to play with that type of player, to have that experience and, you know, hopefully pass it on to, you know, stay in rugby league in some capacity and pass that information and knowledge on. I just feel really blessed to have done what I've done.
Paul, Brett, thank you so much for joining us. You provide a fantastic insight. It's much appreciated. Again, thank you so much for your support, and please stay safe.